Welcome to the second part of A Voice of a People, Life with Linda Sims here on WGH Talk. We also stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. Or you can download a free app called TuneIn on any electronic device and search WWGH. When I say search, I mean you have to go to the bar where it's blank and it'll say search and type in WWGH. Or you can call in during a live broadcast, like today, by calling 740-383-9944 for any questions or any comments you would like to make in reference to the show that we're doing today. Can I share with you those who faithfully support A Voice of a People, starting with Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC, of 1325 North Main Street in Marion, Ohio. Phone there is 740-382-8552. There's also Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson of 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. Phone there is 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. Their ongoing announcement, free produce, will begin April the 15th of 2023. It will begin at 12 noon until 2 p.m. We also have Cheryl Lee. She is the coordinator for Child Evangelism Fellowship, known as Good News Clubs, faith-based programs after school in our Marion City Elementary Schools and Marion County Schools in all of North Union Elementary Schools. If you would like to donate or have any questions in reference to the faith-based after-school program known as the Good News Club, please call Cheryl Lee at 740-262-0939 or go to your local schools to the office and pick up a application. They have to have parental permission to attend. So you can also do that. Okay. Those of you who faithfully listen to A Voice of a People, thank you for your devoted support. Thank you. I appreciate each and every one who listens. And share the news. Maybe someone else will enjoy listening to A Voice of a People with Linda Sims. I have selective guests on my show, and I have a guest today that I'm sure each of you will like listening to. After my thought for today, and it goes like this. Sow a thought and reap a deed. Sow a deed and reap a habit. Sow a habit and reap a character. Sow a character and reap a destiny. You reap what you sow, right? That's what they say. It's a law. So hopefully that can help you today. And if not, maybe you can share that with someone else. So a thought. So thank you for the introduction. We are also on Facebook Live on my page, Linda Sims. And you will be able to watch this program live. Now, my guest today is Fred Malone. He is from the Marion County Historical Society. How are you doing, Fred?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Good, good. He's been sharing some great news with us.
Trying to.
History, yes.
We're trying to give some credit today to the first ladies of the land over the last 200 plus years.
Right, right.
They certainly play a very important part and have played a very important part in our history and continue to do so to this day. So, of course, in the current administration, we have a first gentleman, we have a first lady, but we have a second gentleman, I should say, which is a husband of the vice president.
I do not like that title when it comes
second
to
gentleman,
when
I know.
It comes to a man. I
just know.
Do
it
not
just
like
doesn't
that.
Fit, does it?
No, it does not.
I'm not quite sure I like it either. I think I'd rather just have them say the husband of the vice president.
There you go.
Know, that would be the
Mr. So and so.
Yeah, man, yeah, whatever. Yeah,
yeah.
But hey, they didn't ask me, so. All right, we left off talking about Mary Todd Lincoln, and I had another corpier, another little section on Mary Todd Lincoln. And ask what first lady refused to allow her husband to be alone with another woman, and that was Mary Todd Lincoln. She was especially jealous. She wasn't Abraham Lincoln's first love, and I think she knew that.
Mm.
He was enamored with another woman early in his life. Nancy Hanks, that was his mother. I can't think of the girl's name right now, but she died very young. And it literally broke Lincoln's heart. So I think Mary Lincoln always felt that she was second choice,
mm-hmm.
wasn't, his first love. As a result of that, she never left her husband, never wanted her husband to be alone with another woman. So Mary Todd Lincoln never let her husband be alone with another Lincoln, or with another woman. When Mrs. Lincoln learned that her husband, in his visit to inspect the Army of the Potomac, had been alone with Mrs. Grant, wife of General Grant, she threw a fit. The president had gone to the tent headquarters of Grant, and when Grant wasn't there, he had talked amiably with Grant's wife. Later, when Mrs. Lincoln saw Mrs. Grant, she flew into a tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, Mrs. Grant turned down the invitation to Ford's Theater on April 14th and perhaps saved her husband's life. They were the original couple that was supposed to accompany the Lincolns to Ford's Theater was Mr. and Mrs. Grant.
The night that he was assassinated.
Yep. So he could have been, Grant could have been shot as
yes.
well as Lincoln. Yeah, so I guess her jealousy saved Grant's life.
Mm-hmm.
Which first lady won a seat in the House of Representatives? Never knew this. Again, Dolly Madison. In 1844, Dolly Madison was seen sitting in the gallery of the Congress. Congressman Sanders from North Carolina introduced a resolution to grant Mrs. Madison a seat within the House chambers, and it was passed unanimously.
Mm.
So she became the only First Lady to have a seat in the House of Representatives. Which First Ladies were divorcees when they married their husbands?
Mm.
Florence Flossie King DeWolf. Flossie Harding. A divorcee with one son married Warren Harding, 5 years her junior in 1891. Her shrill nagging of her husband was said to have impelled him to seek the company of other women.
Oh, how terrible.
She must have been quite the character.
She must have been.
Elizabeth Ann Bloomer divorced her first husband, William, in 1947. She married Gerald Ford a year later at Grace Episcopal Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Their marriage was as happy as the Hardings was unhappy.
Oh.
Now, since this book is written, of course, we've had President Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
who had, what, two wives before his current one, or three? Mm-hmm. I've lost count.
I think it was two.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. So I guess that would be the other shoe on the other foot in that particular
mm-hmm.
case. Which First Lady interviewed her future husband for a newspaper before he became president? I never knew this. Jacqueline Bouvier was hired as the inquiring camera girl for the Washington Herald Times shortly after graduating from George Washington University in 1951. That year, she interviewed Congressman John F. Kennedy. A romance followed, and they were married 2 years later in 1953 in Newport, Rhode Island.
So that's how they met.
That's how they met. Aww. She interviewed him for a newspaper. Yeah. Which, as I say, I never knew that.
I didn't either.
Who was the first lady to write her memoirs? And I thought this was interesting in a way, but not unusual for the person. Eleanor Roosevelt. Her first autobiographical work was called This Is My Story and was finished in 1937 while he was still in the White House. Later, she wrote On My Own in 1958. Of course, she lived quite a few years longer than he did.
Okay.
Which was actually syndicated and was published in Ladies' Home Journal, so that people could read it without having to buy the book. She was a prolific writer, and for years she had a daily syndicated column in the, I think it was in the New York Times, called My Day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which First Lady was a teacher who was pursued by her former pupil until she agreed to marry him? That would have been Abigail Powers Fillmore, wife of Millard Fillmore, who was a student in 1819 at Baptist Academy near Moravia, New York. At 19, he was Abigail Powder's oldest student. He had a crush on his teacher from the very beginning, and he married her after 7 years of courting in 1826. He didn't give up.
No, he didn't.
7 years of courting. That's pretty persistent.
That is.
Which first lady had more than 500 pairs of gloves? Now, think about what I said earlier about who bought a lot of clothes.
Yeah.
Mary Todd Lincoln.
Okay.
Mary Todd Lincoln. That term was used to describe Mary Todd Lincoln after a shopping raid in New York. She was called the ransacker of Fifth Avenue because she ransacked the stores. 500 pairs of gloves. Can you imagine that? 500 pairs of gloves.
But, you know, that was a part of dressing back in those days.
Oh, absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
All ladies wore gloves. All, summer or winter, it didn't even matter.
Well, I can really remember. I can remember growing up in the 50s, ladies were still wearing gloves.
Yes.
You always saw ladies wearing gloves. And if you watch any old Leave It to Beaver reruns that are on TV nowadays,
right.
Beaver's mother always had white gloves on, or gloves on, when they left the house
and
to go
dresses.
Someplace.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Just changed here not too long ago.
Oh, that's right. Right. To follow up on that, she says she was a compulsive shopper, which we knew. She had a particular fondness for shoes and for gloves. And in 1 4-month period in 1864, she purchased 300 pairs of gloves just in 4 months.
Mm.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of that. Remember that Marcos woman, the Imelda Marcos, had all those shoes. Her husband was the president of the Philippines or something. Yeah.
Yeah. How many shoes did she have?
Oh, gosh, I don't remember. It's thousands.
Oh, thousands.
Thousands of pairs of shoes.
Ronald felt bad, didn't
Yeah. Hey, I'm kind of a shoe person myself.
Yeah.
Which first lady moved 35 times in 35 years? The family
That's
moved.
Every year, right?
The family moved 35 times in 35 years. And here's your clue. She was an Army wife.
Army wife.
Dwight Eisenhower's wife.
Okay.
Mamie. Yeah.
Okay.
Mamie. She got so used to frequently decamping and pitching up a new tent. Her travels with General Eisenhower took them to San Antonio, Texas, Camp Colt in Gettysburg, Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, and Fort Meade in Maryland, not to mention the Bahamas, not to mention Panama and the Philippines. In 1948, General Mrs. Eisenhower, then living in New York, where he was president of Columbia University, bought a parcel of land in Gettysburg. The courthouse clerk asked Eisenhower why he wanted to buy land in Gettysburg when they already had a house in New York. General Eisenhower explained that he wanted a permanent home.
Mm-hmm.
Said Ike, in the Army, we never had a real home, and one day we want a piece of earth and we can return it to God better than we found it.
Right.
So they built a beautiful home at the edge of the battlefield. Have you ever been?
No.
Yeah, they have quite a nice home there. It's still kept as a historic site. But yeah, 35 homes in 35 years. That's life of a soldier's wife, I guess, you know. Which first lady caught her widower husband by running backward into his arms and fainting? Which first lady caught her widower husband by running backwards into his arms and fainting?
Wow.
That would have been Julia Gardner Tyler. In 1844, as the daughter of a state senator, she was a guest of the president on the USS Princeton, the first screw propeller ship. On this February outing, the highlight was to be the fitting of the new naval gun called the Peacemaker. It exploded, and Secretary of the Navy Upshur and David Gardner were killed. At the blast, a hysterical Julia backpedaled and collapsed into the president's embrace. Julia, a vivacious, striking brunette from one of New York State's oldest families, had been long interested in the widower president. She had earlier shocked New York society by posing as the Rose of Long Island for a department store ad. Pretty risque back in those days. A lover of the stage, she often acted in skits. She married the president in June of 1844. Oh, this is pretty interesting. Who's the only first lady to have earned a law degree? And actually, this isn't correct now because there are two.
Two.
Yeah. First one was Hillary Rodham Clinton. After graduating from Wellesley, went to Yale Law School, where she met her husband. She later taught at the University of Arkansas Law School and then became a partner of the Rose Law Firm in Little Rock. That was when he was governor. Her mentor there was Webster Hubbell. Hubbell, who was appointed by President Clinton to the high position as the Justice Department, later went to jail for irregularities in his billing as a lawyer. I remember that case well. The other one now is Michelle Obama. Mm-hmm. She has a law degree, right?
I didn't even realize that Hillary was a lawyer.
Yeah, and was a practicing attorney. This one you can probably guess because this is pretty early years in the White House. Which First Lady used the East Room of the White House to hang her wet clothes out to dry?
I don't know.
That would have been Abigail Adams. Remember I said they moved into the White House when it wasn't completed?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They basically, the rooms weren't done. It was more or less a shell. The East Room was the only room that basically was finished halfway and had several fireplaces in it. And so that was where she would string up clotheslines in the East Room to hang her clothes to dry.
Right, right.
Yeah. I keep calling it the White House. Didn't become White House till later on. The executive mansion at that time had no indoor plumbing, of course.
So that's what it was called.
It was called the executive mansion, right? They had an outdoor privy. Not until Jefferson became president did he install gravity-fed toilets and had a tank of water installed on the roof of the executive mansion.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever seen pictures of the toilets that have the tank above the toilet seat with a chain hanging down?
Yes.
That would have been a gravity-fed toilet. So the water on the roof, and folks, you can't see this, but I'm using my
right.
arms.
Yes.
The water on the roof in the tank, whenever you pulled the chain to drain the tank above the toilet, which filled the toilet bowl, then the water on the roof would run down and fill the tank back up, so you constantly had water in that. But before that, they had to go outside and use a privy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And the executive mansion was only about the second building to be built in what is now known as Washington, D.C. And so all the ground around it was a swampy mess. They cut down all the trees, which caused terrible erosion, and it was just nothing but a muddy, swampy mess all the time. So can you imagine the President of the United States tromping out to the outdoor privy through about 2 feet of mud?
No, nobody really.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. It was pretty bad in those days. which First Lady was called the Presidentress? The Presidentress.
Hmm.
That would have been Edith Bowling Wilson. Woodrow Wilson had suffered a stroke in Pueblo, Colorado in September of 1919 while campaigning for the League of Nations. Edith made decisions on behalf of her paralyzed husband in the last year and a half of his presidency. As he slowly regained his tenuous hold on his responsibilities, his wife maintained what she called Mrs. Wilson's stewardship. She did so on the advice of the doctor, who said that the blood clot in his brain would dissolve if he was spared the task of decision-making,
mm-hmm.
but that resignation would cause his death. In 1920, rumors were so flying about his incapacity that a delegation came from the Senate to see the president, who sat in a dark room with a blanket over his paralyzed side and leg. Senator Albert Fall, Republican foe of the president, upon leaving said, "We're praying for you, Mr. President." "Which way?" was Wilson's reply. So he wasn't sure whether they were praying for his death or praying for his recovery. But yeah, she was actually accused of being the one that was running the country, not him. But she was only doing that at his say so,
mm-hmm.
and to keep him from not having that stress.
Right.
Which First Lady was once national president of the Girl Scouts? And I never knew this. One of the most learned of our First Lady was Lou Hoover. She was a graduate of Stanford. She was also a scholar in Latin and proficient in French as well as Mandarin Chinese. She served as president of the Girl Scouts while her husband was Secretary of Commerce under Harding and Coolidge. Who was the first lady to possess a college degree? And of course, several have done this since then. But the first was Lucy Webb Hayes. who actually graduated from Wesleyan Female College in Cincinnati, Ohio, which at the time was the female version of Ohio Wesleyan College, which is in Delaware, Ohio.
Right.
A devout Methodist, she would pray every morning with her husband and ended each day by singing hymns. Wouldn't you like to see more of that in the White House?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Oh, this one always cracks me up. And I've seen pictures of this lady with the pipe in her mouth. Which first lady liked to smoke a corncob pipe? That would have been Margaret Peggy Smith, the wife of Zachary Taylor. She prayed that her career soldier of a husband would not win the presidency. She didn't want him to win. A semi-invalid first lady, she stayed on the second floor smoking her pipe and letting her daughter assume the duties of White House hostess. See, there again.
Okay.
She was never actually first lady herself, but had her daughter to do that.
She was sick, too. Well, she not was, sick, but...
She was kind of bedridden.
Right.
Another wife of a general also liked the pleasures of a corncob pipe, and that was Rachel Jackson, although she never actually entered the White House. She died before they went into the White House, and that created a whole other issue, which I'm going to be doing a program in the fall for the library about some of these instances that occurred in the president's life. Rachel Jackson was actually married before she married Andrew Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
She thought, legitimately, that she had been divorced from her first husband.
Uh-huh.
When she married Andrew Jackson, it turned out that the divorce had never been finalized.
Wow.
So she took a lot of heat for it. He took a lot of heat for it. They were called adulterous. She was called an adulteress. It was a whole ball of wax.
So I'm sure
not
it was.
Pretty. Not pretty. In fact, part of that came apart of how he ended up shooting a man in a duel because of the criticism that his wife was receiving.
Yeah, you
crazy.
Did talk about the duels last time you were here, right?
Yeah. So, very interesting story. And again, there'll be some publicity coming out on that. It's part of that learning thing that the library has, adult learning.
Right.
I'm going to be doing a program sometime in the fall about some of the odysseys that occurred in the White House.
Mm.
So, which First Lady had built in the White House a raised platform upon which she could sit to receive guests at a reception? She wanted to be above everybody else.
Okay.
That was Julia Tyler. In her weekly levee, she would greet Washington women on a raised platform that suggested the aura of a throne.
Yes.
Naturally, it drew criticism, particularly from those women who were much older than the First Lady, who was only in her 20s at the time.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so she's a really young gal. They also sensed regal airs in Mrs. Tyler's special carriage that was drawn by 4 white horses. Which she used for driving around Washington. I think she wanted to be queen rather than first lady. I could just picture this.
Yes,
you know?
Me too.
Yeah, here's this big white carriage pulls up in front of the White House. She trots out, climbs in, and they scurry around Washington for everybody to see.
She wanted all the glory.
She did. She did. Which first lady would stage the silent treatment to any member of the White House staff who displeased her?
Mm.
And I would have never thought this about this woman, but I guess I didn't know enough about her. Bess Truman.
Really?
Harry Truman's wife. excuse me. I guess there was a reason why Harry called her the boss.
I guess.
That's what he called her. He called her the boss. She ran a very tight ship at the White House. After years of just kind of a lackadaisical stewardship by Eleanor Roosevelt, because Eleanor Roosevelt was hardly ever in the White House, she was usually out on a trip somewhere, the staff had to get used to Mrs. Truman, who would occasionally rub a white glove across door tops.
Mm.
Staff members who did not do their job received the silent treatment from her.
Wow.
Did you just see her running around, wiping her white glove across everything?
Making sure everything was pristine and clean.
Yeah, yeah. Which First Lady studied at a university abroad? And this would have been one of our later first ladies, Jacqueline Kennedy.
I was going to guess her.
Yep. Yep.
She was from France, wasn't she?
Yes. Okay. She spent a year in Paris after 2 years at Vassar. She then graduated with an arts degree at George Washington University. When she went to France on a state visit in 1963 with the president, the French-speaking First Lady captivated Paris. President Lady said to the cheering Parisians, and I remember this, seeing this on the television, "I am the husband of Jacqueline Kennedy." You remember that? When he was introduced, he said, "No, I am the husband of Jacqueline Kennedy."
Right. She was a beautiful woman, though.
She was a very beautiful woman. And such a sad situation.
Life.
Yeah,
yes,
such a
yes.
sad life. And you know, it's sometimes hard for me to believe that, you know, he's gone, she's gone, their son's gone, the daughter's the only one that's left
right.
of that family. So, and you don't hear much about her.
No, you don't.
She keeps a very low profile. Very active person, but
yes.
keeps a very low profile. Which First Lady once assisted in the defense of two Black Panthers accused of murder? Hillary Clinton.
Oh, of course. I should have guessed that one.
Yale Law School student Hillary Rodham worked on the development of a defense that brought acquittal for two Black Panthers. One of the acquitted defendants later tortured and murdered a fellow Black Panther. Not a good outcome.
Mm-mm.
Oh, this I love. Which First Lady always wore a turban hat with a foot-high feather?
I've seen that. I
yeah.
know I have.
There's drawings around of this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
They didn't have photography then, but Dolly Madison. Yep. She reigned as a queen of Washington society long after she left the White House in 1817. The widow Dolly returned in 1836 to star on the Washington scene until her death in 1849. She wore, long after they went out of fashion, dresses in the Empress style, and her trademark was a turban hat with feathers. Now, there actually is some reason for this. There were no pensions for presidents back in those days. So when they left the presidency, they were pretty much on their own,
mm-hmm.
and some were almost destitute. This is a case where there was almost, she was destitute.
Right, right.
She way outlived her husband. Mm. And if it hadn't have been for the generosity of friends in Washington, D.C., she would have ended up in a poorhouse.
Right.
Because she had nothing. Mm. So she didn't have the money to buy new clothes.
Oh.
So she continued to wear the same dresses that she wore in the early 1800s, mm-hmm. clear up until her death in 1849.
Wow.
But she was always very fashionable, even at that. Even in some photographs I've seen of her in later life, even with those 40 and 50 year old dresses, she still looked very fashionable.
Well, good.
Yeah.
She knew how to work it.
Yeah, and people didn't make fun of her. You know, they mm-hmm. respected her for what she had done
right.
for the country, and a lot of it I think came from saving that portrait of Washington that Gilbert Stuart had painted.
Right.
Let's see. Which First Lady, oh no, this is a good one because I think a lot of people get confused on who actually did this. Which First Lady inaugurated the Easter egg roll at the White House lawn? Now, some people think it was Hayes, but it wasn't. Want to take a guess?
I was going to say George Bush's wife, but that was way before her time, right?
Right. The First Lady that had the Easter egg roll was Lou Hoover.
Hoover, okay.
Yeah. She inaugurated the Easter egg roll in 1930. The first children to attend were those of the White House staff. And, of course, now it's open to a selected
right.
number of people from the public. This is interesting. Which First Lady wore a low-neck, lacy gown, making the daring style the most fashionable in the country? This kind of shocked me when I first read this. They called her Jazzy Julia.
Mm.
Julia Dent Grant, President Grant's wife, shocked the Washington crowd with the gown's display of her bosom. Critics said it was to take attention away from her cross eyes. She was cross-eyed.
Oh.
Nevertheless, the style swept the nation. As First Lady, Mrs. Grant was a lavish entertainer at the White House. One of her dinners, this blew me away, one of her dinners ran to 29 courses.
Oh.
29 courses.
All that food.
Yeah. She was, in addition, a staunch advocate of women's rights and befriended this feminist, Susan B. Anthony, who later ended up on a coin. Okay. I think the first woman to end up on a coin, Susan B. Anthony. Yeah, so she was, yeah, I've seen some pictures of her with the low-cut dress on.
Okay.
Who was the first lady to receive an honorary degree before she entered the White House? Again, Lou Hoover. Was given many honorary degrees before her husband's election to the presidency. In addition, she was decorated by the King of Belgium for her relief work. She could read several languages and authored several books. Yeah, she's a very intelligent woman.
Mm-hmm.
Which first lady lived the longest? And this could be challenged in the very near future. At the time this book was written, which was just about 20 years ago, Mrs. Truman, who died at the age of 97 in Independence, Missouri, of congestive heart failure on October the 18th of 1982. Harry had died 10 years before on December 26th of 1972. Now, the reason I say this could be challenged, if Rosalind Carter continues to live, she could claim this title.
Oh, my.
Because I'm not sure how old she is now. I think she's a year or two behind Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
So that would put her maybe at 96,
whoa,
97 now, maybe. So if she continues to live, she could knock Mrs. Truman out of this,
probably
out of this category.
Probably,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Which first lady was nicknamed Sahara Sarah? I love the title, Sahara Sarah. The White House and the Wet House, it was called. Sarah Childress Polk was a strict Methodist who banned alcohol and card playing from the White House. Sarah Polk. Dolly Madison used to ease the thirst of visitors to the White House by offering them drinks at her nearby Octagon House, both before and after their visits to the White House, for its wine and whiskey hospitality. Dolly's house was nicknamed the Wet House. Sarah's was nicknamed the Dry House.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I have portrayed President Polk before, and very much knew that Sarah Childress Polk was a strict Methodist. So, this is interesting. Which first lady was the first person besides Alexander Graham Bell and his assistant to use a telephone? It was a first lady. Lucy Webb Hayes, another Ohio president. Bell came to the White House to test his invention, and Mrs. Hayes then talked over the phone to Bell's assistant, Watson.
How many presidents came from Ohio?
Eight.
Oh, that's quite.
Yeah. Seven born here and eight lived here. There's a question about Harrison, who was actually born in Indiana but came here very early in his life. So, Indiana, yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. So we actually say eight. They say we only have seven.
But still, that's a big number.
That's the largest number of any. Yeah, right. And there are several states, of course, that have had no presidents whatsoever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, in the early days, a lot of presidents came from Virginia because that was one of the original 13 colonies.
Right.
But Ohio claims eight.
Yeah. Wow.
We actually call ourselves the birthplace of presidents, right?
Mm-hmm. Freedom here.
Don't know how true it is. I mean, again, you want to argue about that one Harrison, but
right.
Which first lady frequently suffered epileptic seizures at White House state dinners?
Mm.
And I know this one well because this is in my ancestry, Ida McKinley.
Okay.
Yeah, Mrs. McKinley. Contrary to protocol, President William McKinley would always sit beside his wife at state dinners. Usually, they separated them by another guest. When his wife had a fit, he would place a napkin or a handkerchief over her head and let the dinner proceed as if nothing had happened. When she had these seizures, her face would contort.
Right.
And he didn't want people to see that to embarrass her or them.
Mm.
McKinley's attentive conduct toward his semi-invalid wife was considered saintly by American women at the time. He is known as probably the most religious and saintly president that we've ever had. and a lot of it was because of his upbringing and because of the treatment of his wife. Right. They had two children that both died in young. One wasn't even a year old yet.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Little Ida and little Katie. Mm-hmm. Katie, I think, was 4 when she died. And that really didn't help, you know, with Mrs. McKinley's illness. Yeah. Which First Lady delivered a speech in sign language at the Gullett School for the Deaf in Washington. That would have been Grace Coolidge. In her opening announcement address to the graduates, Mrs. Coolidge said, in sign language, "My husband, also known as Silent Cal, has forbidden me to speak as First Lady. I have obeyed that restriction. I am not speaking today, am I?" Using sign language. Back to Mary Todd, which First Lady said about her husband, "I have a presentiment that he will meet with a sudden and violent death." You know, she, it wasn't Nancy Reagan who first employed the tarot card readers and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. It was Mary Todd Lincoln. She once told her of a dream shortly before his election to the presidency, that a day after politicking, he saw in the mirror a double image of himself. The second image was a pale like a dead man. His wife's interpretation of it is that he would have 2 terms as president, would die in his second term, which he did. Lincoln, a couple of days before he was shot, also dreamt that he had moaning and crying. He went downstairs and saw in the East Room that there was a dead person there. Someone told him it was the body of the president. On the day of his assassination, Lincoln and his wife took a ride. Lincoln reached out to hold his wife's hand and said, "Dear, I have never felt so happy in my life." Mrs. Lincoln responded, "You said the same thing just before that our son Willie died," and he was assassinated later that evening. Isn't that odd?
Premonition,
yeah. Which First Lady made a point of washing her own undies? This, I could not believe this, in a sense, but then in a sense I could. Pat Nixon. According to her daughter, Julie, Mrs. Nixon said, "There are so many in the White House ready to wait on you hand and foot. I do this to remind myself of who I am and where I came from."
Oh. Okay.
And she came from an extremely poor family.
Okay.
Yeah, extremely poor family. And her husband, Richard Nixon, who I portrayed once, he was a Quaker. His mother was a Quaker. His father was a horrible alcoholic.
Mm.
Terrible. So he grew up with Quaker ideals, but seeing his father drink himself to death. Yeah. I don't know whether you remember the day that he made the announcement and resigned as president.
Yes,
but
I think I do.
In his speech, and this has stuck with me since he did that in 1974, I'll never forget it. It's as clear, a lot of stuff I don't remember, but this is as clear in my mind as the day Kennedy was shot.
Mm-hmm.
At the podium, when he was making his announcement that he was resigned, he stopped and talked about his mother, and he called his mother a saint, and he choked up, and you could see tears running down his eyes when he talked about his mother. She must have lived a tough life with an alcoholic husband.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, and an alcoholic father.
That is a tough life.
Yeah, yeah.
For anybody.
Yeah, for anyone. So, well, that concludes the information I have about the First Ladies. Again,
have some good stuff.
I want to say that what's that popular saying? It's always a woman behind the man that
yes.
makes the man.
Yes.
And that is so true. I know I've had tremendous support from my wife, and if it weren't for her, there are days that I probably wouldn't do what I end up doing. We both like to volunteer. We're both active in the senior center and the historical society, and my wife accompanies the senior choir at the senior center. We spend a lot of time out there. Oh, and by the way, the senior center finally opened today.
Oh, it did?
Yeah. It's been closed, you know,
okay.
all year. When we had that cold snap back in December, pipes burst in the building, and so it did a lot of damage. And the fire suppression system has been causing a lot of the problem for the last month. Excuse me, they finally got the inspection done on the fire suppression system on Tuesday, and it passed. So today was the first day that it's been open since around Christmas last year. So,
Wow, that's good.
Yeah, because, you know, the senior center provides a place for a lot of seniors to go that have, especially a lot of seniors that don't have family anymore.
True.
And, you know, they provide meals out there. There's a lot of activity out there. They play cards. They have fellowship. They make crafts. You know, we belonged out there. I've been a member for 21 or 22 years.
You mean out on Richland Road, that senior center?
The one out on 309.
309.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah.
Cross over. That's the county senior center.
Okay.
Yeah, county senior center. So anyway, that's open today. For those that have not heard, you should have gotten a recorded message on your phone. They've been pretty good about keeping us up to date on what was going on out there. But it officially opens today. So.
Well, good. And put in a plug for the Night of Heritage.
Yes, Night of Heritage Call coming up this Saturday. Again, it is at the Marion County Historical Society building, which is the old post office downtown Marion. There's plenty of parking behind the building, so you would, if you come off of State Street, the parking lot is right behind the building. You will enter there where it says auditorium on the blue awning that hangs over on State Street. If that lot is full, you go across State Street. You can park in the church parking lot back there. The Baptist Church allows us to park in that lot back there. And there is also some overflow parking in the old Y beside us.
Right.
That's the B Church. So both of those lots will be available as well. Doors open at 6. It runs from 6 to 9. You can spend anywhere from an hour to 3 hours in there. It's entirely up to you. The museum will be darkened. You'll be given a flashlight. You'll get to see part of the new exhibit. We're not totally done with it, so you'll have to excuse our mess in some places. It may not be finished, but it'll be safe. You have to worry about that. There'll be anywhere between 25 and 35 reenactors in there portraying characters from Marion's history, Ohio history, and U.S. history that will engage you, like to talk to you, and you'll get a chance to see them and talk to them, and it's just a great event, and it's kid-friendly. Please bring your children. If you're a member of the Historical Society, it's $5. If you're not, it's $8. Very well worth the money. Very well worth the money.
I was looking at that horse in the picture.
Yeah, and if you look at that picture that's on that, see the fellow with the white coat? That's me.
That's
right. I'm portraying my Elvis character
particular.
A couple of years ago, I did. I call my character Pelvis, Elvis's older cousin, because I don't profess to be an Elvis reenactor or anything like that. But I have a lot of fun with that.
I would have never guessed that was you.
Yeah, that's me. We've done it at nursing homes and the senior center and at the Historical Society. I usually sing a couple of songs. My wife accompanies me. She's a retired music teacher and plays the piano, and so we have a lot of fun with it. I actually did an event for the Delaware County Historical Society before COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I went down as Pelvis for a fundraising dinner they had and put on a little show, and it was a lot of fun.
It looks like a lot of fun. Is that Harding behind you?
Yes, that was President Harding standing behind me. I think George Washington and his wife were at the top of the stairs there. We usually have a pretty good turnout. We used to do it 2 days, but we found that Friday was never a good night for us because we were in competition with a lot of school events things like that. So we went to Saturday, and it's also easier on the reenactors to only have to dress up one night instead of two.
True.
But we did increase it to 3 hours. It used to be 2 hours on Friday, 2 hours on Saturday, but now it's a straight 3 hours on Saturday night. But it is a lot of fun. And I'll just briefly mention this. We've got an event in August coming up, which is a lunch with the First Ladies, which is very interesting to come to. And if you might be available that day, it's on a Saturday, I would give you a complimentary ticket to come to that.
Oh, wow.
For providing this service to the Historical Society.
That's great. So, yeah. That is great. And what night is that again?
That's going to be on Saturday. Let me double check the date of that. And again, it's the same type of format as we use for the President's dinner. We feature foods that these first ladies would have eaten in the White House. Okay. This year I have four first ladies that will speak, and it's going to be on Saturday, August the 5th at 11 o'clock at Tri Rivers. And I'll have more information as that comes along, but if you want to mark that in your calendar, you can come and be my guest.
Thank you for that. I will put that in my calendar because I think you have booked up for the next 3 months anyway.
In fact, I'll be back next month. Brought my book along just so I could double check and tell. I'll be back on the 26th of April, again from 10 to 12. That is that one. And I think I might have May too. And in May, I'll be here on the 24th for the 10 to 12 morning with you. Yeah.
And you didn't do June.
Nope, I think we stopped there because we're still filling our calendar with other volunteer activities. Malabar Farm is will be open and running by then, so we do things over there as well. So, thank you, Linda. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Fred Malone. We are out of time.
You're listening to WWGH Radio LPFM, Marion, Ohio, the place for the best guests and talk. From Joey D.